welcome one and all. This is Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, wrapping up my adventure at the recent GalaxyCon Columbus. Hope you caught parts one and two. A bunch of celebrity guests took some time to chat, and I got to welcome back quite a few friends of the show. Today, though, it is first timer time. Yeah, all my guests today are brand new to Comic Book Central. I got to meet up with them for the first time at GalaxyCon Columbus. That was a blast. Check out this guest list for today. From the MCU, he played the Red Skull in the last two Avengers films. He's the voice of Professor X in X-Men 97. Ross Marquand will be here. Also joining me today is Jack Dylan Grazer, who played Freddy in the Shazam films. I'll talk about those superhero flicks with Jack. From Saturday Night Live and the Police Academy films, you're going to hear from the hilarious Tim Kazurinsky, and he played the nemesis of Seinfeld on Seinfeld. He's also the voice of the Penguin. None other than Newman is going to be here. The great Wayne Knight's going to drop by. Huge guest list to get today. So many talents to meet up with at GalaxyCon each and every year from every part of the pop culture sphere. And if you want to get in on the fun for this year's event, GalaxyCon Columbus will be taking place December 4th through the 6th, 2026. Or if you want to see if there's a GalaxyCon event near you, they've got comics, animation, horror. GalaxyCon.com is where you want to go for all the ticket information, all the guest list information. By the way, the guest list for Columbus is already taking shape, so make your plans, get your tickets, tell them Stuberman sent you. I hope to see you there. First up on the cavalcade of stars today is a talented actor you probably know from his time on The Walking Dead. In 2018, he took over the role as the Red Skull in Avengers Infinity War and Endgame. That's a role he continued along with several others that he played on Marvel's What If series. And you've also heard him as Professor X on X-Men 97. Here is my chat with Ross Marquand. All right, welcome to Columbus, Ohio. Appreciate having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, look, it's Comic Book Central. You played comic book characters. I got to ask you, was there a comic book that you recall falling in love with when you were a kid, or a superhero that you recall falling in love with as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I mean, X-Men was always my favorite. I started watching the animated series when I was about 9 or 10 and fell in love with Wolverine because who didn't? And it was the show that made me want to be an actor, literally. So,
have you had a chance to meet Cal Dodd at some of these conventions?
Many times. In fact, I met him well before we even started working together. I met him about 4 or 5 years ago, and then I got cast in the show, I believe, in late 2021. And he's lovely. He's just been such a warm and an inviting cast member. All the original cast has, too. And I got to say, I think it's the best cast that I've ever been a part of. You know, it's incredible.
Yeah. Comic fans can be intense about accuracy. What's the single most surprising deep cut detail that you discovered either about Red Skull or Ultron while you were doing some research?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, you know, Red Skull's gone through so many iterations, you know, from 1939 onwards. He's literally the oldest Marvel villain, period, but also one of the oldest supervillains, period, as well. So you've got Lex Luthor was, I believe, the first quote-unquote supervillain, and right after that, Red Skull was the first Marvel supervillain. Of course, it wasn't called Marvel back then, but, you know, there's just been so many different iterations of him, whether he's Iron Red Skull or, you know, these robot versions, and same thing with Ultron. He's gone through so many iterations, so I was blown away by just the vastness of their characters and how many different forms they've taken on since their inception.
You've done, like, motion capture, you've done voiceover, you've done comic book heroes in different formats. Which one seems the most comic booky to you when you're bringing these characters to life?
Ooh, I mean, definitely X-Men. I mean, Red Skull was incredible because I got to be a part of this movie that was, you know, just this huge international hit, and half of Hollywood was in those movies, you know, of course. But something about playing Professor X in Apocalypse that's so true to the source material, you know? It really was just a not direct translation from the comic books, but a pretty damn close reflection of what they explored in those comics, you know. And I just love playing both of those characters. It's fun to play both one of the best good guys and the best bad guy on that show, you know.
Red Skull or Ultron, who's more fun to slip into for 10 seconds on a convention floor?
I mean, there's something so delicious about Ultron. he's such a complete villain because he doesn't believe he's doing anything wrong. Like a lot of these villains, they there's a mustache twirling element to them that they really feel like they are doing what is right, but they also know that they are evil. Ultron has no concept of evil within himself because he's quite literally just a computer program that believes he is bringing order and peace to the universe, which is chaotic. So there's something really wonderful about the precision and the purity of Ultron.
I'm giving you control of What If for one episode. What's your wildest pitch?
Ooh, wildest pitch. Gosh. What if Red Skull had telekinetic abilities and came back to Earth after being secluded on Vormir for 80 years?
That's the episode I want to see. What keeps you coming back to these genre roles?
They're just fun. I mean, first and foremost, I would say this was my childhood. This was quite literally the reason why I was able to get through so many days when I was being bullied and being picked on. And it was the thing that made me want to be an artist, you know, so that's why I keep coming back. It is kind of wild looking at all this work that most of it, if not all of it, is based on pre-existing comic book IP, you know, Walking Dead, X-Men, Avengers, Invincible, Pokemon, you know, all of this stuff is basically built on some kind of comic book IP, but it's just fun. It's fun to be a part of. These characters are larger than life, but they are rooted in life as well. So I just love how grounded all of these roles have become over the years. They've kind of gone away from the more bombastic way of doing things in the 80s and the 70s, which was still, it had its time and a place. But I love that they're grounding these characters in real life so much more than they used to.
Russ, enjoy the weekend, and thanks for joining me on Comic Book Central.
Thanks for having me. Thank you. Yeah.
Man, incredibly insightful answers there. That was a lot of information. You can tell Ross is not just a performer of these characters. He is definitely a fanboy. It was so great to catch up with him there. All right, from a Marvel hero to a DC hero in just one word.
Shazam!
Yeah, in the Shazam films, when Jack Dylan Grazer's character Freddie Freeman utters the word Shazam, he transforms into a superhero. The superhero is played by Adam Brody in the super suit in the movies. I got to catch up with Jack at GalaxyCon about the initial approach to bringing the fast-talking Freddie to life. Freddie is such a lovable character, and there's the chaotic energy in both films he has. When you first got the role, did the character that you portrayed in the films, did he come out exactly the way you thought it would right when you first got the role, or was it sort of organic over time?
I think I honestly went in to production with the same sentiment and the same momentum that I went into with the audition. I think I sort of, I didn't really do much. I think I phoned a lot of it in. I think I was just doing funny and talking fast.
But that's what became the character, really, yeah. In essence. So were there things you took from the comic books? Did they give you a bunch to read? Were there trade paperbacks that you had? And what did you dig into? And what were you able to bring from those comics?
Good, great question. So I read a lot of the first issue stuff, Captain Marvel stuff, and I tried throwing Easter eggs from those, like tried throwing Captain Nazi references around and stuff like that, and improvised a lot of stuff because I was super into it, and I was really into the DC comics before, and just trying to up my nerd game on the DC world.
What was the most fun scene to film for you, and why?
In the first Shazam?
Either one. Whatever
okay.
Jumps out at you the most time that you... I mean, it could have been something behind the camera. It could have been an improvised scene. It could have been, I saw it in the theater and was like, blown away.
Yeah. Okay, that scene, I think, would be the scene when me and Zach, when Shazam and I are in the park in the snow and we find that person who's mugging that girl and we go up to stop him. And I say that I'm his miniature manager. We improvised so much on that day. And also the scene where we go and get beer and stuff. So much improvising and so much fun to do it with Zach. He's a really great sport about it. And the second one, I loved doing stuff with Rachel, and I loved doing stuff with Helen Mirren and Lucy Liu. Those are awesome.
You can't beat that.
No,
yeah.
My heroes.
How much of the chemistry between you and Bill, the characters, obviously there's a ton of chemistry. How much of that was organic, and how much of it did you guys improvise? How much was scripted?
Well, I mean, if we're improvising it, it only can be organic. We're not trying to force anything. So a lot of that was, we did improvise a ton. Zach and I, And I tried improvising with Asher, and I kept throwing him off and stuff, and that's a really fun thing to do, is like throw curveballs his way.
Oh, your improv threw him off a little bit.
Of course. Oh, okay. My God. I kind of never say my lines, so.
Okay.
That's not necessarily true, but I do. But I do.
That drives directors nuts.
I know, sometimes. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there something that surprised, because you're here with the fans coming up, is there something, a fan reaction you got or feedback that you got about Freddie that surprised you?
I love meeting people with disabilities who said that they got to see a character in the spotlight with crutches and a strange bone disease, and they're like, I never thought that I would see that in a superhero movie. I'm like, well, that's really cool that I could represent that sort of thing for you and help you feel seen, and like, you know, it's cool to tell stories about those kind of people. That's one of the coolest things about playing Freddy.
Do you think we'll see you as Freddy again? Is it possible? I mean,
I would love that so much. I would love there to be another Shazam installment. I'm not sure if it'll happen.
Okay.
But anyway, if
you're up for it, though.
I'm so up for it.
What is next for you, and how can fans find out about where you're at?
Well, I got some stuff on the horizon. I got some voiceover stuff that I just did. I got a movie coming out in March of 2026 called Four Kids Walk Into a Bank, which is based off of a graphic novel. And that was really fun with Liam Neeson and a bunch of other great kids. And I did a movie called Ponderosa. It's an indie movie. And I did a movie called Ruby, another indie that I shot in New York City and upstate with my friend Jaden Martell, who was also in It with me. So.
Oh, you got a lot going on. So, Jack, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Thanks for joining me on Comic Book Central.
Thank you for having me.
Man, a lot going on for Jack there. Hope we get more Shazam films with that cast. I really enjoyed both of them. I know the second one kind of, it gets a bad rap a little bit, but I thought it was fun. I love the character. I love the cast. I enjoyed both films. All right, shifting gears from superheroics to silliness. It is not often you get to run into a cast member from Saturday Night Live, but that's exactly what I did at GalaxyCon. And it is super rare that one of those cast members was born in my hometown. Yeah, I'm a Columbus, Ohio resident now, but I was born and raised in the small Pennsylvania town of Johnstown, pretty much famous for the floods that happened there. Oh, and a couple of Hollywood flicks were filmed there, Slapshot with Paul Newman, and All the Right Moves with Tom Cruise and Leah Thompson. I think there was a recent Jeopardy champ that was born there. Yours truly was born there. So I guess you could say Comic Book Central had its origin story in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, as did the great Tim Kazurinsky. You might remember him from the Police Academy films as well. Hilarious in those films. I stopped by Tim's table and, of course, I had to chat with him about our mutual hometown in Western Pennsylvania.
There's not too many of us from Johnstown, Pennsylvania here today, I would imagine. So, fellow Johnstonian.
Yep, I'm a Johnstonian.
Yeah.
Born in 1950.
Okay. Well, I was born in 1967. That year is significant to you for Johnstown, right?
Yeah, because I came, at age 2 months, my Australian war bride mother took me and her other four babies back to Australia with her, and I didn't come back until March of 1966, and then I graduated, went to high school here. I lived with my two Polish aunts in Kernville, and went to Johnstown High, and I edited the high school paper and worked on the yearbook, which entitled me to a job at the Johnstown Tribune Democrat. And one night, just after I graduated from high school, there was, a wildcat strike by reporters that didn't show up, and I ended up punching out about who the editor was going, who can type? And
wow.
I just finished the typing. The only guy in the typing class. And I banged out about 20 little stories, and the guy hired me that night. So, like a few weeks out after high school, I ended up with a nightside reporter job at the Johnstown Tribune Democrat, thinking that only this happens in America.
This is, if only you knew, it was so much more. Ahead.
And then I wind up years later on Saturday Night Live, where Garrett Morris used to say, America been pretty good to me, very good to me. Well, America has been very good to me, too.
Do you remember your first byline for the Tribune Democrat? And I can't believe I get to say Tribune Democrat in an interview, finally. This is the weirdest thing.
Yeah. Actually, I was just doing basic local stories that were in AP style. But my two big stories that year, I interviewed Denny McClain, who had come to town for an organ recital, and was a Detroit guy, ball player. And the other one was, now God, am I going to blank on his name, a comedian piano player, but I had seen him weirdly in Australia, and he was a masterful pianist,
right,
who he used to have a phonetic alphabet where he'd go, a period would be, and an exclamation point.
That sounds like Electric Company. Who did that? Yeah.
King. It's going to make me crazy that I can't remember his name because I'm 75 now.
I'm trying to remember the. I'll remember too now, yeah. Because he used to do. It was either Sesame Street or Electric Company. I think he did that on.
Yeah. But he was literally.
Oh, was it Victor Borga?
Victor Borga. Victor
we did it.
We did it.
We did it. Two old guys finally did it.
Sometimes it takes a village.
Oh, my God. We got there.
I wrote a TV pilot once where there were three old guys, and it used to have to go around the cyclotron, and they had they do this before they get the answer. Yeah.
One story for three people. Oh, yeah. My God.
But so, he interviewed me, and he was great. And when I would interview him, he bought me a gin and tonic. It was my first my first alcoholic drink.
Nice. And from Victor Borga, man.
Yeah. And I was actually only 17 at the time. So.
Oh, well, wait.
Under the drinking age. So,
did John Belushi personally recommend you to Saturday Night Live and mentor you?
He did. He did. He had come and seen me on stage at Second City, and for some reason took a liking to me. I was actually rewriting a movie called My Bodyguard at the time, and so I had to be in the office working in the daytime.
Adam Baldwin one. Yeah,
Adam Baldwin.
Chris Makepeace.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely little film. Lovely film. Tony Bill, wonderful guy, directed it. And so John would, and at that time we were working on the Blues Brothers, and it would come and I'd do my show at night, and then we'd improvise until about 11, and then John would come by and say, let's go out, and I was like, you know, I got to get up 7 in the morning. I got to be here working on the script. And then he grabbed me in a headlock and said, we're going out. So,
oh, wow, party.
And so we hung out, and he had his blues bar there. And it was really great fun. And I had no idea that he would. When I got hired at Saturday Night Live, I didn't even know it was because of him. And, a few months later, the producer, Dick Ebersole, told me that John was the one who recommended me. And said that I would make a good den mother for any cast. So I don't know what the hell where he got that idea, but it's exactly what happened. So I owe that to him. I weirdly never auditioned for Second City or Saturday Night Live, and I probably never would have got hired either place if I had to, because I don't audition well.
Was there a piece of advice he gave you that still sticks with you today, that still resonates with your performing today?
John?
Yeah. Or was it more of just a tone?
You know what? I actually, he said, you're not going to quit. Don't ever quit. Don't ever quit. Because my first few months on the show, it was so crazy on that show that I decided to quit and go back to Chicago. Because we were troubles with the writing staff, and I was a writer on the show as well. And so I told him I quit, and he said, oh, Judy and I'll drive you to the airport. And they actually picked me up, drove me to Judy's psychiatrist, and said, you have to go in and talk to this guy because, you will never get this opportunity again, and you're walking away from it. You can't quit. So, and he was right, and I stayed, and it has, having been on that show, made it the rest of my life go in sync. It was, all good things happen. And John was a great friend and a really wonderful and talented and super intelligent guy that people don't know. He was remarkable.
What's next for you, and how can fans keep up? Do you have a website, or are you out on social media, and what can we look forward to?
Yeah, I'm not on social media. About 5 years ago, I said to my daughter, I think I'm going to go on Facebook because I was retired. And she got the blood drained from her face, and she said, Dad, if you go on Facebook, you'll never get another thing done in your life because you're such a social animal and you know so many people. You've been so many places. He said, you'll get swallowed up. You'll go down the rabbit hole and we'll never see you again. So I never went on.
All right.
Yeah. So,
what's next for you?
Next for me? I do a, I'm doing a Galaxy Comic-Con right now. It's one fun with my buddy Bobcat Goldthwait.
Your table mate there.
My lifelong
coming to a convention near you, right?
My brother from another mother. Yeah, we so it's for me it's a little mini vacation, and I get to hang out and meet people who really, you know, love all the stuff, the crazy stuff that we did.
Tim, if we ever get back to Johnstown together, the first round's on me.
Yeah, great. And we'll go.
I'll buy your first gin and tonic just like Victor Borga.
And we'll go to the Jets game at the War Memorial.
Yeah, yeah. We'll tell we'll finish each.
Hey, one time I got on a plane. I'm sitting next to Rob.
We'll finish each other's stories in Johnstown.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
Thank you, Tim.
Paul Newman. I asked him what his favorite movie was. It's the most fun he ever had on a movie. He said Slapshot.
Slapshot.
And I was like, so.
That's it, Johnstown, PA.
Johnstown, PA.
Love it.
Yeah.
It is not often I get to chat with someone that gets my Johnstown, Pennsylvania references, so that was fun. And by the way, how about that Belushi story? That was fantastic. Tim was in a couple of films with John Belushi early on. He got SNL for several years, and then a slew of Police Academy films right after that. So, yeah, you could say it worked out nicely. Fun chat there. All right, let's stay with comedy. Chat with a man who brought one of the greatest sitcom characters to life for 7 seasons on the smash hit Seinfeld. Wayne Knight, he played Jerry Seinfeld's nemesis.
Newman! Newman! Newman!
Iconic pop culture character for sure. But what you might not know is that Wayne also has an extensive voiceover career, bringing classic characters like Oswald Cobblepot, a.k.a. the Penguin, to life. So I wanted to chat with him about that. Here is the great Wayne Knight.
I know you're always talking about Newman, but I want to talk about some comic booky stuff with you. You played two very different kinds of villains, the Penguin and Harley Quinn, and I hope I get the name right. Is it Abagnazar in Justice League Unlimited?
I didn't even remember. Abagnazar.
I think sometimes you probably record these things years in advance, and all of a sudden something comes out. Was there something that surprised you that somebody's like, I love you in this, and all of a sudden you're like, I didn't even remember doing that, dude?
Well, but in general, I think that when you do voiceover, you do a great many of them.
Yes.
And the only way for it to be lucrative for you is to have them keep coming. And as an actor who's a live-action actor who gets permission to do voiceover, it's a different kind of thing.
Okay.
You don't have this panoply of things that you've done that you're known for, you know, as much. So although I come in and get to do Penguin, it's not like I do it for years on end.
But you knew the character. You knew the how much of an iconic character was. Were you a comic book kid growing up? Did you read Batman?
Yes. I started out as a DC guy.
Okay.
When I was
Who was your favorite?
Kid. Well, I was a Superman guy. You know, when you're... it was the 60s.
Yes.
I'm a little kid. It's Superman. And then it becomes Spider-Man as you reach adolescence.
Yes.
And you begin getting a little testosterone.
You resonated with the character a little closer.
Resonate with Gwen and resonate with the other people, you know.
So was Penguin in your DNA at all? Like, did you...
Oh, sure.
Burgess Meredith? Was that the...
Of course. I mean,
how tough was that to not do Burgess Meredith?
Well, I love Burgess Meredith, but I also, you know, I love the idea and aspect of the Penguin and all the incarnations of Danny DeVito's Penguin and different Penguins, you know, and just Cobblepot. I mean, I like the lore of Cobblepot. So playing Cobblepot is not necessarily playing the Penguin as you've seen him. You're playing Cobblepot. So,
if Newman existed in the DC or Marvel universe, which hero would instantly consider him an arch nemesis?
Interesting. Because, you know, the question is how he would use the bag. And what's in the bag? The thing about Newman is he never delivers the mail. So there's a lot of stuff in the bag. You know, he could pull out a howitzer out of that bag. There's no telling what's in there.
What do you see is in the bag?
I see a panoply of sandwiches.
Okay.
And perhaps a roast.
What's coming up next for you? Do you got more voiceovers? More? What type of acting? What projects? And how can fans follow you?
Well, ironically... you know, although I was in Space Jam, my wife is an editor in animation, and she edited all of the Kung Fu Panda movies, and is editing Steph Curry's movie, The Goat.
Nice.
And I'm playing a very fertile gerbil in that film.
Perfect. When can we see that? And is there a website or social media?
It's Yeah, I think it's pretty much coming because the picture is just about completed.
All right.
So it'll be wrapped in January and probably come out either in the summer or the fall.
Okay. And are you on social media?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Nothing? We can't follow you anywhere. Just coming to a comic convention near you.
Yeah, I'm not a big social media guy.
That's fair. Wayne, thank you so
much. I'm an old man.
Aren't we all?
Well, we need to find social media just for geriatrics where they can't figure out how to spell.
I think it's called Facebook so we can get out and yell at people. Wayne, thank you for joining me on Comic Book Central and have an amazing rest of the weekend.
I appreciate it.
And we don't have to wait. The GOAT is in theaters right now. Go check it out. Fantastic cast in this one. Be sure to check it out and be sure to listen for Wayne's gerbil named Frank. And that is a wrap on my adventure at GalaxyCon Columbus. My thanks to my guests today, Ross Marquand, Jack Dylan Grazer, Tim Kazurinski, Wayne Knight, and of course, the equally terrific talents who joined me on parts 1 and 2, John Wesley Shipp, Lauren Lester, Diane Pershing, John Jackson Miller, Brent Spiner, Peter Facinelli, and Christopher Daniel Barnes. Man, that is a lot of celebrity conversations you just got. It was an epic convention, to say the least. And of course, my thanks to the entire staff at GalaxyCon for welcoming Comic Book Central and making it easy by having the show right here in my backyard. That is so much easier than traveling. Love that. GalaxyCon.com, that's where you want to be to make your plans for any GalaxyCon show. They've got pop culture shows, animation shows, horror shows. Check them out. Make your plans. Get your tickets. And be sure to tell them Stuberman sent you. All right, kids, I just gave you back-to-back three-parters on my adventures on the road. Next episode, going back to the familiar format, because next time on Comic Book Central, who are you going to call? Yeah, Ernie Hudson, that's who. Yeah, the Ghostbusters legend is going to drop by the Comic Book Central lair for an in-depth conversation. Ghostbusters, of course, we're going to talk about Ghostbusters. Quantum Leap, love that show, love the reboot that he was in. Going to chat about that sci-fi series. The Incredible Hulk, yeah, Ernie got to throw down with Lou Ferrigno back in the day for an episode of The Incredible Hulk. We are going to revisit that. So much more pop culture greatness when Ernie Hudson drops by. You do not want to miss it. And you will not miss it if you subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, you can catch it on the YouTube channel as well. So subscribe to the show on YouTube and share the lair. Tell everyone you know about Comic Book Central. We have the mostest fun here. Ernie Hudson, the next time we get together. Until then, keep safe, keep reading those comics. And thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
I'm placing a personal bounty on the head of Tim McCracken.
You can't put a bounty on a man's head.
I just did.
Go get him, killer!
It's wild. It's outrageous. It's outrageously funny. Paul Newman, Coach Reggie Dunlop in this supercharged world of hockey, invites you to meet the crazies who make it that way.
They don't want you to score goals. They want blood. They're booing you.
There's never been a film like Slapshot. There may never be another.